Welcome into another episode of Everything is Logistics, a podcast for the thinkers in freight. We are proudly presented by SPI Logistics. I am your host, Blythe Brumley, and I am happy to welcome in very special guest, Reid Lustalau, founder at Lost Freight and maker of the popular Please Advise hat. And if you are watching on YouTube, then you see that hat in all of its shining glory, and you've probably seen it on various different social media platforms. You know, for this conversation, I'm not exactly sure what direction we're going to go in, but I think we're going to talk a little bit of freight tech, a little bit of freight marketing, and then see where the conversation takes us.
Life, what's up? First of all, hold on. Where the heck is your hat? This is BS.
It's I tried to look for it. It's in my it's in the closet, I think.
I need to make more. And this has been a focus of my focus. I use that term loosely. I need more female-friendly hats because I have to beg the women in my life to wear the trucker hat. Not a lot of them are super inclined to wear it or purchase it. So we'll get there. You can be a consultant for me on that.
Yes, I would. I know that Kaylee Nix was FreightWaves host, FreightWaves Now host, and she was very persistent on getting the dad hats. And so I thought to myself, shoot, I should have waited to buy that one because I think I was in your first run of hats that I purchased one. And then I didn't really know what the heck was going to come from it, but it looks like it has fostered this sort of, you know, beautiful community of freight brokers and truckers and everybody kind of in between. A lot of people from the tech space. So you've started a little bit of a movement.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a vibe, you know, like, it is, maybe it's a movement, maybe it's a community, maybe it's a bunch of other things. I don't know what word we want to use, but we can get into that. But yeah, no, it's definitely been cool and, was not on my bingo card for this year. I'll be honest, but yeah, we can get into it. So what do you want to start with?
Let's start with the folks who probably saw you like pop up on LinkedIn within the last couple of months and have no idea where you have come from. They're probably like raising one eyebrow up very high. I can't do it myself. For folks who may not know anything about you and wonder where the hell you came from, give us a sense of what your backstory is.
Am I making a concerted effort to not curse all the time?
Oh, you can curse.
Okay. I might let slip a couple.
This is podcasting. We can do whatever we want.
Okay. We're not on some other people's shows. I was out of college. I started a job as a carrier sales rep, at Echo. That was in 2016, graduated. Like a lot of people who get into this industry, graduated from college, have a philosophy degree. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do and, you know, was probably overthinking everything and was just kind of very aimless. And I needed to make money, somehow. So I had a buddy who had graduated a year before me and he was like, hey, like, I can get in, you know, why don't you come work in freight? And I was like, okay. So I applied and I had moved to Boston. My now wife was living there. And so I moved out there after college and got a job at the Echo Boston office and ended up spending 5 years, 5-ish years there, mostly in Boston. And then I moved to Chicago in September 2019. Then COVID happened and I moved back to Boston. So I spent 5 years in the brokerage side. And then after that, I left and went to Trimble, big TMS company, which most listeners probably have interacted with in some way, shape, or form, I would assume. I was there from January of 2021 until March of 2022. And I was working on a bunch of stuff. Don't need to really get into that, but I got laid off March of 2022. I had been looking to build my own thing, whatever that meant, for a while and knew kind of I wanted to, but didn't have any good ideas. I was always writing ideas down, getting super excited about an idea and never actually doing anything about it. So I did that for years. But I started teaching myself how to code, got okay at that. And then when I got laid off, I was like, okay, I can either like do the sensible thing and go get a job, because I just found out my wife was pregnant. And so I could do the sensible thing, but I just didn't. And it's been like a year and a half, and you know, I've got a kid now, and I've got kind of a couple different things going on. So backstory, that's kind of my backstory. Fell into freight on accident, and have just kind of ran with it. So
were you a freight broker at Echo?
Yeah. Yeah. I was a carrier sales. So like I, you know, looked at a big list of shipments and went out and found trucks for them. So
was it one of those situations where you come right out of college, they sit you down and tell you to start smiling, dialing?
Uh-huh. Yep, exactly. Yeah. It's a very simple job. It's gather, figure out where the trucks are, match it to loads, offer the loads to the carriers, book the loads, track and trace them, deal with all the nightmares that arise in that process. So I don't know how many loads I did when I was there. It was probably north of like 15,000. I think I did the math one time. It was a lot. So I was a decent rep. I wasn't the best, but I was pretty good.
What was it like, I guess, maybe going from like the freight broker or carrier sales role into like Trimble? Because that's you're selling back into the audience, like kind of like yourself.
Yeah, well, so Trimble had acquired this company called Cubix, which was a shipper TMS. And it was the first shipper TMS they had really acquired, to my knowledge, at least. And I was kind of joined because my former boss, the guy who had hired me at Echo, had since left and started working at Trimble. And so he was like, hey, I'm doing this thing. We're kind of like trying to connect this shipper TMS with all of the carriers who are using the Trimble carrier TMSs and build like kind of like a marketplace type thing. And I was like, that sounds cool. Like I wanted to get into technology. I was just generally very interested in getting out of the kind of the day-to-day broker role, which is very, very, I'm sure all the listeners will nod along and say that, you know, it's very stressful to do that for a long time. And it's hard to, sometimes when you're in it and you've been doing it for a long time, it's very easy to be kind of, grass is always greener. Like I will literally go do anything else but this, even if you're making good money. So that's basically where I was at. I was like, I'm going to go do this new thing and see what happens. I was just looking for something new. I had moved to Chicago actually, because I was interested in figuring out like where the headquarters was at Echo. I was interested in kind of trying to sink my teeth into some bigger stuff outside of just pure sales, and would say that I didn't really actually try that hard to do that when I moved there, and just thought it would just naturally happen, which is not how things work. So I was looking for more, and I certainly found something different. I'm not going to speak ill of my former employer, but did a bunch of stuff and learned a lot of things. Things you should do, things you shouldn't do, kind of saw the inside of a technology company, which was interesting. And yeah.
And so how did you, I thought you were West Coast based.
Well, so I went to college in Milwaukee at Marquette. So I lived in Wisconsin for college, and then I moved to Boston immediately post-college, and then spent between there and Chicago 7 years, and then moved back to Scottsdale where I grew up. Arizona is where I grew up. I moved back there in April of 2022. So like literally right after I got fired, found out that we were going to have a kid and moved across the country. Like, now my residence is now in Arizona. But I've been in California all summer to not be in Arizona because it's hot as hell. So
yeah, you have to be you have to be really close to water during these hot ass summers.
Yeah, 100%. Hopefully that makes sense. I think I've just kind of said a lot. I don't know if I'm just some guy who, you know, worked in freight for a while, you know, booked a lot of trucks. I spent a very, very brief amount of time as like a cradle to grave, like independent agent at Armstrong Transport. Like after I got fired, I was like, I had a buddy who runs an office for Armstrong. He's like, hey, you want to come broker some freight in the meantime? I was like, yeah, sure, screw it. So I did that. So I've kind of worked in the split model. I've worked in the very briefly in an agent model. So I've kind of seen the brokerage role, pretty good. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just figuring it out as I go.
I think that's sort of the life of any, you know, entrepreneur, especially when you get into freight and you go through like the entry level positions, because that's how I got started. I was an executive assistant, so I guess pretty much entry level. But then I also got to hear everything that was going on like the broker floor, because my desk was right next to it. And it was one of those things that as soon as I heard people like slamming the phones down, I was like, that's a job I never want to do. So kudos to you guys for actually doing that job day in and day out, you know, for 5 years, like you said. Sure. But there comes a time, you know, when you probably want a little bit of a change. And then, you know, it just kind of happened, I think, maybe all at once for you. And so for the entrepreneurial side of things, you also own, or you co-founded, I believe, Lost Freight, or you are the founder of Lost Freight. Can you tell us a little bit about what was the catalyst of wanting to start that company based on you had experience at Trimble, you had experience at Echo. Why start Lost Freight?
Yeah. So I guess I'll get into it. So I, like I said, I got fired, knew I wanted to do my own thing. That was March of 2022. Didn't know what that thing was or what it was going to be. All I know is that I wanted to do my own thing, quote unquote, right? Whatever the heck that means. So I flew out to Chicago to visit my buddy who runs the Armstrong agency that I was going to go, work with. And so I was just going to go out there and spend some time with him, learn the system, just kind of hang out and figure it out. And I, in the background and previous to this, like I said, been learning how to code. And when I was out there, he was like, hey, like, you know, I know how to code, you know how to code, like, can you build this very basic, like, tracking portal? And I won't get into the details of what that even means, but just take it as that. It was a very, like, dumb as rocks tracking portal for shipments that they wanted to be able to give tracking information to some of their customers. And I was like, sick. Yeah, I can build that. Sure. I've never built anything that anyone actually uses, but like, I'll figure it out. So I basically did it, built this thing myself, started the company Lost Freight, which is the name Lost Freight is just literally my last name. L-O-S-T, like my last name is Lustalo, but my dad's family pronounces it Lost a lot. And I built this moniker. I kind of claimed this moniker, Reed is Lost, as like an email that I'd used for years before that. And so I literally was just like every, you know, endeavor that I would spin up, I would just use the word Lost in the name. And so I was like, oh, sure, Lost Freight. And then I spelled it F-R-8 because the domain was cheaper. So so that's why it's called Lost Freight. So I started that. It was going to be the tracking portal. I was like, I'm going to go find some more kind of like SMB brokers, smaller brokers who might, you know, want to subscribe to this little tracking portal I built. And so I signed my buddy as a customer and they started poking around with it. And I very quickly realized that I had no idea what I was doing with regard to like actually running a software product that people use. For anyone who's built like actual like written code and, you know, tried to stand up like a kind of a more modern web app. It's like, there's a lot that can break and you press a button 1,000 times yourself, you know, and it works. And then somebody new presses it, who's not you, and everything breaks and you have no idea what's broken. So that was basically me. I had no clue what I was doing. These guys were trying to use this thing I was building and there were all these issues. But I don't even want to sell myself short because I tend to do that. Like it was pretty cool, like what I was able to build myself, and I learned a ton. But I spent so much time doing it, and I was basically learning from scratch. So it was very informative. It was a good experience. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. It was way over my skis. And I had previously met probably 10 months before that. I had met my now co-founder on Twitter talking about golf and crypto. And turns out he was a software engineer. And so just previously over the last 10 months, every time I would work on a project and it would like get stuck or I would break something, I would always just kind of put up the bat signal and be like, hey, Jake, can you come help me? Like, can you fix this for me? And he would come in, he would be like, Reed, this is like, what the hell are you doing? Like, this is all fucked up. Like, what is this? And I would be like, oh, whatever, just fix it. Like, and so he did that with the tracking thing. He basically was like, hey, I'll fix this, but like, what are you doing? Like, tell me about what you're doing. So I told him about what I was doing. At that time, I had also realized that maybe this product wasn't, you know, what I was going to inevitably build and stick with. So we kind of put our heads together and came up with this new direction. I was thinking about capacity, and I was thinking a lot about the experience that I had had when I was a carrier sales rep and just things I could build for carriers, because a lot of my friends are carriers. And so we landed on this new idea, which is the current iteration of the business, which is a tool for carriers to kind of house capacity data and then share it with all the brokers and shippers they work with. We can get into what that means briefly, but we settled on that idea in October of last year. Jake was like, you're not doing any more coding. I was like, all right, good. that's probably for the best. So I kind of have since just done everything else. And he, over October to January, basically built the product. And then we launched it in January. And kind of the rest is history. And all the other BS that I've done since then that we'll talk about has just been a result of me just doing stuff online, trying to market without really knowing how to do it and without having really any resources to do it either. So, because we've raised no money, like we've bootstrapped everything and just kind of figuring it out. So,
are you in freight sales with a book of business looking for a new home? Or perhaps you're a freight agent in need of a better partnership? These are the kinds of conversations we're exploring in our podcast interview series called The Freight Agent Trenches, sponsored by SPI Logistics. Now, I can tell you all day that SPI is one of the most successful logistics firms in North America who helps their agents with back office operations such as admin, finance, IT, and sales, but I would much rather you hear it directly from SPI's freight agents themselves. And what better way to do that than by listening to the experienced freight agents tell their stories behind the how and the why they joined SPI. Hit the freight agent link in our show notes to listen to these conversations, or if you're ready to make the jump, visit SPI3PL.com. And for folks who, I guess maybe a little bit of a backstory. So back when I was an executive assistant, I was also in charge of all of the marketing. And one of my biggest, like, heavy lifts still to this day that gives me a little bit of PTSD is trying to get brokers to use an email marketing platform in order to send out their available loads and available equipment every day to their targeted base. And so it was always a pain in the butt. Some of them did it, some of them didn't. But for your product in particular, you actually help carriers, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you help carriers send out their equipment lists to their broker connections, right?
Exactly, yeah. So basically, what I realized just reflecting on my experience as a broker working and interfacing with carriers was a big part of my day as a carrier sales rep, and brokerages, you know, employ armies of these, you know, I was going to say kids, but they're obviously not kids, but like armies of reps who just literally call carriers, uncover their capacity, call them and ask them where their trucks are, enter it into a system, get it matched with loads, and then offer loads. Like that's what, like, so the first portion of that, just gathering capacity info, was the vast majority of my day. It was like, I had my carriers, the guys I was working with, who I'd worked with forever. And then I would always be looking for new ones. And I would just ask them a very basic set of questions every single day, multiple times a day. Where are your trucks? Where are your trucks? Where do you need freight? Right? What do you want me to look for? Like, whatever permutation of this question. And so I was like, you know, there were some carriers who were proactive about sharing that info with me. Like, they would send me an email truck list, or like we'd be on Google chat, or they would text me like, hey, I've got a truck here, or whatever form this took. Like, the ones who proactively shared that info I was way more likely to work with them, and I was way more likely to spend time to go find them freight, because they made my life easier. Like, if I didn't have to pick up the phone and call them, to get this info that I needed to go find them loads, then I was like, I could just passively scroll on their email or whatever. Like I was, it was better for them. It was better for me. And it was just kind of the water, so to speak, of the relationship. Like if our relationship, broker-carrier relationship, is like a seed, like that was like watering the seed, essentially, to use a kind of a metaphor. So we do provide a platform for carriers to house capacity data and then share it, right? And one of the ways they can share it on the platform is with an email truck list. And I've kind of backed into the understanding that this is like email marketing for a carrier, you know? So we've got a nice, clean, kind of pretty simple way for a carrier to build like a profile, like a company profile. And one of the things that's a component of the profile is their capacity, their truck list. And they can share it on their public profile that exists, like, you know, it's just a link they can share with whoever they want. And then the other way that they can share it is the truck list. So they can go in and build an email list, as many brokers as they want. And, you know, when their truck list is up to date and they want to send it out, they can press like two buttons and send it to their whole list. We've also got a list of like preferred brokers that are people that they don't know, but have signed up to like receive truck lists. So it's like just a very simple way for them to get introduced to new people through the platform. So that's a new thing. We're not new now. It's like a month or two old, and that's been really cool. But yeah, I mean, it's really, really simple. And I guess, you know, from a tech standpoint, it's like, you know, we didn't reinvent the wheel. You know what I mean? It is very, very, very simple. And I was very purposeful about wanting to go from, you know, for a lot of carriers, this info capacity lives in their head. It doesn't really live anywhere. Like I want to go from it lives in their head to it lives here, and we'll figure out what to do with it now that it's here. Hmm. We'll figure out ways to share it. We'll figure out ways to integrate it into other people's systems. But like, I'm not obsessed with integrations like off the bat, right? We got to have it here first. And if it's too much, if it's too like tech bro-y, like you're never going to get carriers anyway. So yeah.
What do you think it is? Because it sounds like such a beneficial thing for both sides to do. Yep. But I guess with the context of brokers versus carriers, like the dynamic of that relationship, we all know that like a good broker-carrier relationship is best for everyone involved. But it seems like there's a lot of like stuff boiling underneath that's ready to sort of like explode out with like truckers versus or carriers versus brokers. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is when there are tools and solutions like yours that exist to make that relationship a little bit smoother?
There's a lot that goes wrong. And everybody's kind of constantly at each other's throats in this world. And there's a lot of people who aren't, you know, carriers have a bad taste in their mouth a lot of the times when they're talking to brokers that they don't know, you know? And I think also they're suspect of technology because so much of the technology that does exist is for the benefit of brokers and shippers and is kind of for carriers as like an afterthought, or like their presence on any platform is more for the benefit of the people who actually write the big checks, which are brokers. And like, if you look at the tech that's built, it's like, and people say this to me all the time, and they could very well be right, but it's like most of the stuff is built for brokers because brokers are the ones who pay for technology. You know what I mean? Like, that's the market. So if you want to make money and you want to be able to charge people, like go after the customer that writes big checks, that doesn't churn, that is open to technology, right? Don't go to the customer that is penny pinching, is churns a lot, that is high maintenance, and that ultimately has a really low like LTV. Like they're not going to pay you a lot of money in the grand scheme of things. So, I think carriers are suspect of technology. And so, I mean, man, there's just so much that goes into it. But just, I think really what I was foolishly, depending on who you ask, trying to do is like, I really don't want to worry about brokers. Like brokers receive these truck lists. Brokers can go on a carrier's profile and consume the info passively. But like, we have no product for brokers right now. It's all carriers. The funny thing is I get way more inbound from brokers than I do from carriers. So like everything's, it's all screwed up. I mean, it's just interesting to me. And I'm very much like, I try not to get like jaded about like how that actually is. Like, it's just frustrating that I'm trying to do something for carriers, but sometimes they just are like, they just assume that it's not for them, even though it is. So it's just an interesting phenomenon. It's been a journey full of learning so far.
And I think too, we're almost like skirting around the topic of like just technology and trucks in general. And I think that it's sort of almost like left drivers with a bad taste in their mouth of like adopting any kind of technology. And because of how they've been kind of like screwed over in the, you know, autonomous trucks or ELDs or, you know, cameras that are facing them while they're driving, you know, things
That's
like
all
that,
surveillance.
That, yes, the mass surveillance, not respecting of their time. You know, I think Gord, who is Twitter famous. He's not on Twitter anymore, but you might have read his Substack or listened to his podcast. He's one of the voices that I really try to listen to as far as like the driver perspective. And it feels like there's just almost like a resistance to a lot of transportation tech. Do you get that feeling too?
Yes, 100%. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, if we can very crudely lump the existing tech into buckets, it's like, and then how it relates to carriers or how they view it, it's a lot of it is surveillance to them, right? Like ELDs, even if you can make the argument that it's not, or you can paint a picture where it benefits them, great. Like, I'm not saying that there's not those cases, but like surveillance, like tracking, visibility stuff, like all of these things that all these products that all the brokers use that carriers end up having to interface with, I just think that they have a bad taste in their mouth about it all, for better or for worse, whether it's a deserved or not. Like, that's just the reality. And when you build something new and you go out and you try to sell to carriers, it's hard to avoid getting lumped into that bucket as well. So, yeah. So I think that's,
it's probably a lot at one time though, too, because a lot of these, I think, what was it? The ELD mandate went into effect, what, maybe 2 years ago, a few years ago. So it's all still,
I think it was 2018. Yeah.
But it's still, it felt like a lot at one time. So it's the ELDs, it's the tracking, it's install this app on your device, install this app in your truck. It feels like a lot all at one time, mm-hmm. where it almost, you know, is maybe just a tech overload problem where you have five different apps for one job functionality to work with 10 different brokers.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, that is another problem. App fatigue is real. And you know, if we're talking about like capacity, posting your trucks or like load board type stuff, I mean, all the major brokers, all the big ones at least, are all working on or already have their own kind of proprietary private load boards. And then there's a bunch of companies that have kind of risen to the task of providing that same sort of feature set to SMB and mid-market brokers, right? And so everybody wants their own app, and for good reason, because there is, you know, if you're a big broker, you don't want all your freight posted on a board where your competitors can go and search for it, or where you're not able to tightly control who can access it, right? Because you're opening yourself up to fraud. Like, somebody might be able to piece together who your customers are. I mean, there's just a bunch of different reasons why you don't want that and why you would prefer to just have your own experience. So the byproduct of that, the end result of that, is everybody's built their own thing, and all the carriers are on 100 different apps, and each app is asking them to provide the same basic set of data, which is, you know, what lanes do you run? Where are your trucks? Where do you need freight? How do I get in touch with you? Like, all this basic stuff, and everybody wants it. But at the same time, nobody is going to share it with each other. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm a carrier and I download C.H. Robinson's app and I can enter my capacity in there, like, C.H. Robinson's never going to be like, oh, yeah, sure, Echo or Coyote or TQL. Here's this capacity data that this carrier entered into my app. Hell no, they're not going to do that. Why would they? And so really, like, at least in theory, in an ideal world, like, I would very much, you know, in what I've been envisioning from the beginning is, like, a carrier, like a carrier who has, you know, kind of this one to many platform to just house this very basic set of data in and maintain it in Lost Freight. And then we can dig the channels to share it into other platforms. I mean, that was like a very obvious idea from the start. And other people, I mean, that's not a new idea either. Like people have tried that. But really, like what you're trying to solve for is, okay, and what you need to be able to say to carriers is, hey, you're going to come here, you're going to log in here, you're going to put this data here, but it's going to benefit you in your relationship and your interactions with all your other brokers. Like this isn't a just you enter it here and it only benefits one person. It's you enter it here and you can add all your brokers to your email list and interface with all of them. So, yeah, but funny enough, even that, like, that message is lost on a lot of carriers too.
That's like, what I was going to say. Like, how are you combating like the messaging to carriers, knowing everything we just talked about? It's probably got to be a challenging sell to them.
It's really hard. I mean, it's on the one hand, there's just generally carriers and truckers are everywhere, right? They're across all social media platforms. They're not in very well concentrated in any one place. And then with regard to what I'm selling, like the product I'm selling, I don't necessarily want to just sell it to like a driver. Like I'm trying to sell it to a fleet owner, right? And so I've been thinking a lot about this. Like I have no formal like marketing training. Like I'm figuring it all out on the fly, for better or for worse. So and I've also been like allergic historically to just like marketing in general, naively, not like for any good reason, I've realized, but I in many ways selling to carriers, especially small carriers, is not just like B2B, you know what I mean? It's in many ways, it's kind of like B2C. So it's got this weird, like kind of hybrid thing going on that just makes it extra challenging. To just get a message even in front of them is hard, you know?
Have you had any sort of like light bulb moments while you're figuring out? Because I think that was definitely the case for me. I have no formal marketing training outside of going to conferences. I was a waitress that, you know, my boss invested in me and sent me to conferences to learn. So that's the extent of my training. But it was learning by doing. And, you know, let's throw something up against the wall and see if it sticks. That's sort of been my go-to method for 10 years. It sounds like it's a little bit of what you're focusing on doing right now. But have you had any like light bulb moments that you've said to yourself, like, wow, that this is really working?
I wish that I could say I have, specifically within the domain of getting carriers to sign up for and pay for Lost Freight. I'm still searching for that, honestly. And I don't know if, like, I know it will come. And there's a ton of things that I need to be doing that I know I need to be doing to further push that product that I'm just not doing because I'm, for better or for worse, a very, like, kind of distracted person, and I do and run around and we'll probably get into this, but I've done a lot of other things since I started trying to sell this to carriers too. And so my attention is all over the place and I've raised no money. So I've not been able to hire anybody to do the things that I'm not focused on doing that I should be. So the light bulb will come. Mm-hmm. I have some ideas about what the light bulb is, like where the switch is. It's just doing the work to flip the switch is like, I need to do that more.
Yeah.
I'm honest with myself. Yeah.
Like, I feel you on that. Because it's when you're an entrepreneur, when you're a founder, like the ideas are so easy. And writing them down is, one of those things where it's like, wow, look at all these great ideas. But if you don't actually execute on them, like nothing comes from those ideas.
Yeah, ideas are stupid. Ideas are cheap.
That's where I struggle.
If you're listening and you're like, oh man, like I don't want to share this idea. Somebody's going to steal it. Nobody's going to steal your idea. Like your idea sucks. Like I guarantee you, your idea sucks. All my ideas suck. Like, anyway, sorry, go on.
Well, no, I was going to say, well, speaking of ideas, maybe ones that don't suck, let's get into a little bit of the please advise hat phenomenon. How did it get started?
Well, I mean, when you're a broker, and when you're in this world, we send a lot of emails and stuff's always going wrong, and we would very much like to, in many situations, say a lot of things that we can't say. And so in lieu of saying to a carrier or saying to a coworker or saying to a customer who has done something wrong or is doing something wrong and you're trying to figure out what's going on, like, you would probably prefer to say, hey, like, what the fuck? Like, what are you doing? But instead, you just say, please advise. So I've always enjoyed the phrase. It's a good phrase, stripping with meaning. You can use it a lot of different ways. It's like a Swiss Army knife. I love it. It's a good phrase. And so put that over here. in February, I built... So put that over there. I like the phrase. Put over here, I like building shit. The idea of building something very, very simple, like a very simple website, and then getting it to go viral and just like using social media and using just like word of mouth to like try to spread something is like also something I'm interested in, just the general idea of like virality. And so in February, I built this site called pleaseadvise.ai, which was... used the GPT API from OpenAI and prompted users for a warehouse name and would generate. And the idea was I was like, what's the most useful thing I can use AI for truck drivers? I was like, excuses. Like, these guys are late. Like, they're too busy to like come up with an excuse. So like, we'll just let AI do it. So you type in, if you're going to try it, it doesn't work because I need to refresh the API key. So you'll just watch Braveheart spin for... anyway, sorry. So I built that in February and just kind of like put it out there and just made like a stupid TikTok that was like, hey, do you need an excuse? Like, here you go. And so that was cool. And then I was like, I don't know. I just like this phrase. So I wrote it on a piece of paper and cut it out. Not even cut it out, like ripped it apart and kind of made and then taped it on top of a hat I already had. Which maybe you've seen pictures of that. So I did that, and then I wore the hat on the first time I ever went on What the Truck with Dooner, which was maybe in March, I think. So I wore it there, and just for fun, I guess, just because it's outrageous. And then last night I was scrolling through LinkedIn to see when I started posting on LinkedIn. One of the first things I said was like, hey, like, would anybody want a hat that says please advise on it? And like one person, this might have been like March, one person was like, yeah, like, sure. Like, and the funny thing is that person hasn't even bought one of the hats yet. So it was literally like nobody said anything because I had nobody following me. And it was just like a very stupid thing to say, like in this professional setting. And so anyway, I hit up this hat company and was like, I'm just going to make these hats. So I made 12 and put them on Twitter and like a Stripe link and sold 12 of them. And then I ordered some more and then I ordered some more and I ordered some more and I've sold a lot of them. So.
And you've also built like this community too around it where we've talked about it on Freight Friends with Grace. She comes on once a month. But we were talking about to be able to see other people that work in freight who have bought this hat and to see it on a map is just really fun almost like it like you can all, how do I say this? You can put a face, like with social media, we have faces to names, but you don't, I guess, grasp the entirety of sort of like a Freight Friends group until you see it like laid out on a map where it's like, wow, there's 10 of us.
Yeah. No, it's so I guess the thread that connects all the things I'm doing is just like literally making it up as I go. Like I have very like maybe I can in hindsight draw a strategy, you know, kind of try to pull the thread through all the things I've done, but I just really have, for better or for worse, just figured it out with a bunch of other things. And I'm realizing now in hindsight that it's cool and there's a lot you can do with it. And a lot will be done in the near future to try to take what I've done and turn it into something more formal and try to do even more cool shit. So that's vague, but we'll get there.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, that was a really good lead into the Discord community, because mm-hmm. I don't know that a lot of folks in Freight were familiar with Discord, but now like 500 of them are, and you've built up this community. Start this specifically for Lost Freight and then it kind of evolved into something more, or did you start it with bringing the whole sort of Freight community together in mind?
No. I started it because initially, Jake and I used it personally amongst ourselves to communicate about just like building the damn thing back. So I started it September 13th, and it was just that whole time was just me and him in like a private channel just talking. And then I thought, okay, maybe I'll like invite some customers use it as like a feedback channel. But very quickly, as soon as I started getting more active on Twitter, I just started inviting people to it, and it's just kind of taken on a life of its own. Just only recently I've started to do more like actual formal stuff within it. But historically it's just been kind of a chat room. And whenever I talk to people who seem interesting, I have a lot of conversations, like for better or for worse. I'm super, like I said, I'm a distracted person. So somebody reaches out and they're like, hey, you want to talk? Like, at least for now, like I've been sure. Yeah, why not? Like, I like talking to people. So, and usually the end result of that is me inviting them to the Discord and then buying a hat, or they maybe have already bought a hat and they just want to participate. So like, I think it was not on purpose. I had no intention of doing the things I've done from the beginning. And but we have whatever it is, like 400, almost 500 people in there now, and we're doing formal events. And there's a lot of good conversations that are being had, and there's a lot of things. Yeah, there's a lot of good conversations that I don't think are really happening anywhere else.
Yeah, I would agree, because the Freight community, especially with as long as I've been doing marketing in this space, it has always been so fragmented. It's always been challenging to try to do something a little bit creative. I always thought, you know, I come from the sports and entertainment world too, where like sports and entertainment kind of set the bar so high as far as like how entertaining you can be. But then on the Freight side of things, it was always like, well, this is what everybody else has been doing, so I guess I'll just do some of the same. But it really wasn't until 2020, when COVID hit, those conferences that were in person first went digital. And so that's where like a lot of social networking started, especially on LinkedIn within the Freight community. But it was always on LinkedIn, and it wasn't on any other platform. But now with Twitter/X starting to grow, now Discord is in the mix. It feels like there are starting to be like these solidified places where some of those, in my opinion, more interesting conversations are happening. Because for folks who may, maybe I should back up a little bit. For folks who don't know, Discord is almost like a Reddit. It's almost like a Slack, kind of married together. And for that, I guess, sort of the user experience, you can have different Discords that you're a part of, but then within each Discord, like the Lost Freight Discord, you can have different channels. Like one is for tech, one is for AI, one is for truckers. Then you also, like you alluded to, you have these different events. You have Tech Bro Tuesday, you have Freight Therapy Sessions, I believe. You also have regular like AI sessions, where if you're working in any capacity or interested in AI whatsoever, like I feel like I'm pretty in that like the Freight AI community, and I've learned things that I never even thought about just by simply joining the Discord, because you can host audio events. Last week there was one of your Discord members, Garrett, he was actually showing how to build AI tools. And if you're halfway interested in any of this, like this is the place to go and learn and to talk about it, which I think is really cool and no one else has done until you guys. So, I mean, obviously, like, kudos to you. Did you think any of this was going to come out of it, or it was just kind of like rolling the dice and seeing what's going to stick?
I think I started in February, or yeah, in like February, right when I started selling the hats, which I was April, I think. That's right when I sold, first of all, when I told my partner Jake, like, hey, I'm gonna go sell these hats, like, everybody was like, you're insane. Like, that's not gonna work. Like, what are you talking about? Like, that is like the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And I was just like, okay, whatever. Like, maybe it is. And so right in April, when I put the first link up, like when I first ordered the first 12 and I put a Stripe link up that didn't have a picture of the hat at all. Like I didn't know what it was going to look like. And I just said, hey, if you want a hat, like buy one here. And I sold them all on the first day. I was like, oh, this is like, like jokes on you guys. Like I'm going to be like, this is going to be sick. And still, like, I sold 12 hats, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, like, whatever it is. I was a three-figure e-commerce founder. That's what I titled myself. Anyway, yeah. So around that time is when the Discord started to, like, kind of tick up a little bit. Right then and there, I was like, these are, like, three different businesses that are, like, right here in front of me. And I kind of started thinking pie in the sky, coming up with all these probably horrible ideas, but some of them won't be, and some of them become true, and some of them already have, that like when you get a group of people together in a very like informal setting that's driven by kind of jokes and fun and just like good vibes, like there's a lot of cool things you can do, but that environment is very hard to foster, and it's really easy to ruin, and I feel like, especially in freight, are really boring and are not equipped to do something like that, for better or for worse. And if you set out with the explicit goal of like, oh, we're gonna build a community or whatever, it's like when things are forced, it doesn't work sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I've taken a hands-off approach, but at the same time, I've been like, okay, I know we're going to be able to do cool stuff, but like, I can't force anything. And so I'm just kind of like stirring the pot, so to speak. And I'm letting it tell me what is possible. And I'm doing what I can to kind of nudge it in the direction of what I think is going to be possible as a result. I know this is all vague, but like, I think that's a good way to put it. We've got the Tech Pro Tuesday event. It's only been a month since I started doing that. Like, and we've got like yesterday, I don't know how many people, like 30 some odd people. Like, it's like almost midnight on like a work night and people are talking about like EI, like in a Discord group. Like, and we've got people who are like, you know, equipped to actually do something about things, right? People who can build stuff. And so I already know there are people in the Discord who are like building their own products. Like they're already demoing them in the event. So long term, I mean, who the hell knows what's going to come out of this? Like, but it's going to be really cool. And at the same time, like as time goes on, the bigger the group gets, the bigger our distribution is as a group, the bigger my distribution is, I'm just going to be in a position to say to people, hey, if you've got a good idea, here's a group of people who are users. Here's a group of people who are potential customers. Here's a group of people who are like, maybe there's partners or employees or integrations or whatever, all here. And you can just come right here. And instead of starting from zero yourself, you can plug into this platform I've built and everything's there. And if you have an idea and you want to build it, like I can help, you know, like I don't want to do it myself, but I can help you. Like I can send a couple of tweets. So, you know, we started with the Tech Pro Tuesday thing. That was super cool. I mean, we've been doing Freight Therapy, which is a Twitter space. We've been doing that for a couple months. And that's just like memes, like screw around, like have fun on Thursday nights. So we're still doing that. But I kind of put the call out to the group maybe like a month ago and said, hey, if you have an idea for an event, like here's a space to host it in. I'll help you market it, but it's your thing. And because I can't do everything myself. You know right. what I mean? I can't do everything myself and I don't want it to be about me, you know, it's not about me. And so I kind of put that call out there and Garrett, answered it and started his like AI thing. He's like an engineer, I don't know if he wants me to say where, but he works at a big company as an engineer professionally. And so he started his thing. We're playing with the name. I think he's still calling it AI Takeover, but I think somebody else suggested the name .AI Boys, which I thought was just like really funny. Like all these companies who use the domain, like the domain .AI, that's pretty funny. But anyway, yeah, so he started that. And I was like, hey, like, I'll do some tweets, like, but this is your thing. And so I think the first time he did it, he had like almost as many people as we get on Tech Pro Tuesday. So like, that's pretty damn cool.
And these are all people in the trenches, like at various sectors of the freight industry. So you have drivers, you have engineers, you have executives, you have just brokers. You have a good mix of a variety of the community.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point, and that's really what I wanted from the beginning, was like, it's so cliche to say that the industry is siloed, but it's so true. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, and it's very, you see that online too, right? You've got all the brokers and all the tech bros on LinkedIn just like hitting each other with these like gobbledygook buzzword 6-paragraph posts that say very little. You've got that, and they all like it. I'm not even shitting on it. Like, they all like it, and it works for them. Great. But there's no drivers hanging out. Like, maybe there's a couple, but they're not like, it's not like going to Facebook to like a Facebook group where all the drivers are like, you know, talking about broker transparency or like whatever, right? And so drivers and Facebook, for better or for worse, brokers and tech people on LinkedIn. And then Twitter has just always been this kind of like whatever, just like very amorphous thing. But I always wanted from the beginning to try to just get people from every group. Right. Because when you can do that, when you can get people talking to each other and all kind of bought into the same vibe and under the same umbrella, so to speak, like there's a lot of cool things that can probably happen as a result of that. So a lot of these engineers, like a lot of the people in the tech chat, like are building stuff for drivers or brokers and have literally like never talked to one, you know, wow. Like it's crazy. And you'd think, you know, if you're building for somebody, you would talk to them, but it's not always that simple, for better or for worse. So, like we had a guy last week. I've been Kevin Rutherford, who's got his stuff. I participate in a decent amount of his Twitter spaces, and so I've met a ton of drivers in there. He's got a huge driver audience, owner ops mainly, and so a couple of those guys have trickled into the Tech Bro chat and are just like, I don't know what the hell you guys are saying, but I'm gonna sit here and listen, and so. You just never know what will happen when you can do that.
There was one during the – because I was in on the AI takeover session, and there was one moment that it stood out to me as far as like the power of this community, because there – you know, you got Garrett that's building an AI tool like right in front of your eyes, but then you also have a driver that's talking about how some of her drivers are going to – the English is not their first language, and so they're going to a lot of these different truck stops. Everything is in English. And so she was like, I need an AI to help my drivers understand what's going on at these different locations. And mm-hmm. I thought, why hasn't anyone invented? It seems like something that is so simple, to a simple tool to give to your drivers. And that is one thing that I was like, wow, where else online are these conversations happening?
Yeah.
And I mean, there are. I think that's the only place.
No, I agree. And the conversations are good, but what I really want to be able to provide is a place to really tighten and expedite this like iteration process, to where somebody who's got an idea like can come here and in one place get access to feedback, users, distribution, so that they can go quick, right? And because right now it's like, it's hard to go fast in this industry when you start from zero and you're building like a piece of tech, even if it's super simple. Like LastFreight's really, I mean, it's a very simple idea, but I started from zero, you know, and it's hard to start from zero, especially without raising money. And so what you see is, you know, in the startup scene in freight is like, for better or for worse, a lot of people starting from zero, and the end results of that is like, you have to go and raise a bunch of money. You have to like maybe maybe do things the way you wouldn't want to do it to be attractive enough to go and raise money. And like, if there's a lot of like stealth mode stuff, and there's a lot of just like not rapid iteration. And I just like want people to be able, like, if you ask developers and engineers who hire engineers for the logistics space, they're all just like, yeah, it's hard to hire the best talent because it's not sexy, or it's not, doesn't pay what it does if you go work at Google and all this stuff. I think a lot of it, you know, and another question I guess I've asked a lot of the engineers is like, especially the ones who have hired people for these roles, is like, you know, or have teams, manage teams, is what do you, like, how often do you have an employee of yours who like comes to you and says, hey, like, I built this thing for Freight in my spare time. Like, can we build this product, or can we do this? Like, cool ideas. And like, a lot of, most of them have said never, like, that's never happened. And to me, like, that isn't just because everybody's lazy and we have like no good people in the industry. Clearly that's not true at all. I just think it's like, you need the environment to do, to launch that, those sorts of things. And in other industries, that exists. And there's like very, you know, it's like, if you talk about like developer tooling, or like if you talk about crypto, like, for better or for worse, crypto being like a very open and like composable system allowed people to come in and really sink their teeth into it and build shit quick, like, and iterate quick. And there was like kind of a ripe market. Like, that's like a good environment for people to like latch on and start to try stuff. And I know this is like super messy, but like what I'm saying, but really I like want to try to bring that same sort of thing and make it possible in this world. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
no, well, there was this article in Business Insider this week that was talking about how a lot of millennials and Gen Z, they are not posting to traditional social media platforms in a traditional sense. So, for example, Instagram, the picture that you post, there's probably 30 other pictures just like it, and you picked the perfect one in order to post. And so for a lot of millennials and Gen Z, they are now avoiding posting altogether and instead moving to these smaller niche communities. They're moving to group DMs on these platforms, and that's where the growth is happening in the social space. And so, like, as you're talking, it makes a ton of sense why the community has grown so much and these conversations are taking place, is because there hasn't really been another form for them to have that, a little bit of an outlet, whether it's their current job or their current social media landscape. It feels like that maybe this community is giving that to them.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think really, like, when I started in the industry, I was looking for, like, if what I'm building now in this group existed and I could like have joined it in 2016 when I started, like, that's really what I was looking for. And I was looking to like kind of sink my teeth into it and interact with people in like an informal setting to like learn more and talk about ideas and do all this cool stuff. And like, it just hasn't really existed. And maybe it has, and I don't know about it. Like, I'm open to that idea, but like, I don't know if it has. So
would you have been nervous to share your idea?
Probably. Because I had never built anything and I wouldn't have known that the idea is like essentially meaningless. Like, you know, ideas are just like, there are no really, like, there's probably no idea we could come up with in this industry that hasn't been thought of. Right. Or it very, very likely hasn't been tried. So like, it's, the idea is not, like, and I'm not even being cynical. I don't think, like, ideas are fun. I love ideas, but like, the hard part, and the hard part isn't even building like a product. Like, we talked about this a lot yesterday. Like, the hard part about building a product and launching a company and growing it, the hard part is like distribution. The hard part is selling it. The hard part is bringing it to market. The hard part is getting people to understand what it is, getting people to use it. Like, that's the hard part. The hard part's not building it. Like, we got plenty of engineers. You can hire a dev team for, you know, wherever, to build product for you. And people do that, and great. But like, that's not the hard part.
Yeah. So it's definitely the execution of it.
People need to share too. Like, so just on this point generally, it's like, Man, I can say confidently now that I owe every bit of success, quote unquote, I've had so far to like just sharing and oversharing, you know, like really I try to encourage people to tweet, because even if the tweets are stupid, like it literally doesn't matter. Like just everyone's going to forget. Like if you say something stupid, like nobody's going to remember.
And the algorithm isn't going to show it to anyone anyways.
Yeah. And especially if you have no followers, like I encourage everybody to overshare literally, because you just never know what's going to happen. It's like the internet is very magical, you know, and it's hard for us to, sometimes it's easy to forget that whoever is on the other side of a chat or on the other end interacting with one of your tweets or scrolling past whatever, an email newsletter, whatever, a piece of content, like those are like actual people, right? And if you do that enough and you put ideas enough out there, like somebody's going to latch onto it and find it and say something to you. And you do that enough, like, I mean, crazy, you know, magic happens. Like it's just reality. So if you're listening, you should start tweeting or Xing or whatever the hell we call it now.
We're going to stay calling it tweeting. I refuse to call it Xing or whatever. Posting, I think, is what Elon prefers us to call it. But Twitter is just so iconic brand, iconic verbiage. Like if you invent a verb, you should use it forever.
I tend to agree with you, although and I'm not like an Elon stan by any means. I do, but I am interested. I don't think it's going to matter in the long run. I think it's going to be fine, but we don't have to get bogged down on that. But let me say this. I'm in the process right now, and this is some alpha for the show. I'm in the process of kind of putting some stakes in the ground and launching like kind of the please advise thing as its own thing. And so there's going to be, it's basically like a media company. Honestly. So more to come on that.
I know. What else do you got to share about that? You can't just leave us hanging like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that there's a lot of good conversation, and conversations can be good content. And a lot of times the conversations are about content, and there's kind of this like little loop in this situation that want to tap into. Because there's a lot of good, there is good freight content out there. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like there's you, there's, insert other podcasters, insert other, you know, Gord you mentioned, like there's a bunch of people kind of bubbling under the surface. And I very much would like to be able to lend the platform that I'm building to them and create almost just like, just lend the platform to them. So I have a bunch of ideas for that. And we're going to be doing more events in the Discord. We're going to be figuring out new and interesting ways to kind of package the conversations that are being had as content. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity to do some cool stuff that you can't really do anywhere else. That's probably a little vague still, but we're going to do more events, mostly online. But I mean, I've been traveling a decent amount lately, and I've been doing these kind of like get togethers. I've done two of them, I guess I should say. So it's not a lot, but, you know, I last week on Tuesday, I had a meetup with Mike Bush in Long Beach, and we got like 7 people to show up, just, you know, but from us just posting, like we didn't send out an invite or anything. We literally just posted, and I had a couple dudes show up from Twitter, which was sweet. And then last week I was in Chattanooga doing some stuff, and we did one on Thursday and had some FreightWaves people come, and you know, and then a couple people from Twitter, including a trucker parked his truck with his girlfriend at the truck stop nearby, went out a route, parked his truck, Ubered to meet us at the bar, which was sweet, hung out with us all night. So like I'm really interested in just gathering all these different people together, and that could be in Discord, that could be in real life, that could be whatever, all over the place. So more to come.
Yeah, that's definitely really cool to see almost like the growth of it, where it happens in these, I call them like digital handshakes, but then they turn into real life relationships that can only be enhanced further by those digital connections. Because we're, you know, we're all busy. We all have things to do. Our attention spans are, you know, 30 seconds, if that. And so where we choose to spend our time online, and then where we choose to spend our time online that moves in person, I think that, you know, somebody might hear, like an executive might hear, oh, well, only 7 people showed up. But like you said, there was no marketing behind it. A couple people from Twitter showed up. Like, you can't measure the ROI of that, because it's going to just continue to snowball on top of each other. But you can't build the snowball without getting started at first.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. I think it's going to be, especially in the beginning, a lot more figuring it out and how we inevitably are able to monetize it is, I mean, there's going to be kind of the more traditional ways you monetize media, but like, I do think that there is a serious opportunity to, for me to be providing a very engaged and bought in group of people. Like, this audience is not just like, you know, newsletters, like a newsletter audience, right? These are people who are like bought into the brand, like are there participating, right? And are super engaged, which is awesome, which is like, and you can't have that unless there's like actual good energy, you know? And so really, like, I just want to continue the energy we have and just the good vibes, and just figure out how to grow it, not growth at all costs. Like, it's not just a numbers game. Like, numbers is like a vanity stat. Mm-hmm. Like, I want like, and in many ways it's hard to measure. Like, you can't measure vibes. You know what I mean? Like, how the fuck do you measure vibes? Like, and I've been joking around with like the Sonar people from the beginning, like the Please Advise Vibe Index, like put that in Sonar, like, and it's always up and to the right. Like, and like, it never goes down, literally never goes down. Like, I joke about that, but it's like, how the hell do you measure that? I don't know. How do you benchmark that? How do you chart performance? Like, if you're an advertiser and you want to like advertise in this space, like, how do I go and say, hey, we've got 400 people, but they all love each other. Like, you should pay me more because of that. I don't know. Like, I'm going to figure it out. Like, I'm not naively, maybe I should be more worried about it, 'cause I do need to make money. Like, I need to make money somehow. Like, I don't have a job, you know, like, I've been doing all this stuff for a year and a half. I feel like I've, you know, delivered some value, hopefully, to people. And they tell me every day that I do, which is cool. But I need to, you know, there's a lot you can do when it's more formal, but always we need to maintain the vibes.
For sure. I think that is a pretty good, well, I would end it right there, but I have these questions that I typically ask at the end of each interview, and I gotta ask you some of these. So one of them that I have on my list is, who are the most interesting companies in freight to you?
So there's this company called Genlogs, started, he's got a couple other co-founders who I haven't met, but his name's Ryan. I met him at FreightWaves in Cleveland at the Future of Supply Chain show. They're doing some interesting stuff. They're kind of bubbling under the surface. Genlogs, I like them a lot. I'm super interested in this product that Garrett's building. He's in stealth mode right now, but he's actually demoed it. He's demoed it a decent amount in the Discord. So I'm bullish on that. Beyond that, I'm just, you know, for better or for worse, I'm much more interested in like the low key stuff. Like, I'm more interested in Garrett building something on the side in his spare time than I am in some company that's raised, a $100 million at some crazy valuation that hasn't got a product. You know what I mean? Like, so that's, I like those two. I'll stick with those two.
Okay. Good answers for that. Next one, favorite. So I probably know the answer to this already, but favorite social media platform and why?
I mean, it's no question. X, I'm a Twitter guy. I love Twitter. I think it's the best thing ever. I mean, there's why. I just think it's the most disorganized and it's the most chaotic, and I just am a pot stirrer, and it's just way better. Like, I don't even have a good reason. I just like it. It's also the hardest to grow on, in my opinion. I mean, I make memes. I guess I haven't even talked about that. So I've made some memes just in my day, just for fun. And, I started posting them on Twitter and, you know, we'd get a couple likes, but like, you know, and I'm now kind of friends with Paul for Caviar, and he was like, dude, you should make an Instagram and post these memes there. And I was like, okay, screw it. Like, so I've got like 1500 followers almost on Instagram, like for doing nothing. Like, but I've got 2000 or 2200 followers on Twitter, and that's taken me so long and so much work to do. But like, I think Twitter is just way more intimate. I just like it way more.
Yeah, I feel like you can definitely tell people's personality way more by their tweets and what they like. Back when I used to do like sports interviews, I would see the PR list of questions from the teams that they wanted us to ask, but I would skip all that, go right to their Twitter and see what have they liked in the last like 6 months? Because that's going to tell me a lot more about that person. It's going to be way more interesting than if it's the PR questions. It's been a little bit challenging to use that same strategy in Freight, but hopefully with more and more people joining the platform.
We're getting more people. We're converting people from LinkedIn. I mean, come on, guys. Like, what are we doing here? Like, just come over. Back.
LinkedIn is one of those, like, I have just shit-talked so many people on Twitter for so long that LinkedIn felt like my professional rebrand. But now it's like at times where I just want to bring that Twitter energy over to that platform. But I get a little nervous to do so because my persona that I've built there is professional, that mindset. Whereas Twitter, it's just I'm throwing grenades, leaving for a few hours and coming back and seeing if I exploded anybody's brain.
I echo that sentiment. I mean, I think I used to hate LinkedIn. I thought it was stupid. But now I've realized that it's like, damn, I've sold so many hats on LinkedIn. Like, I don't know how many. Like, but it's just because, like, since I'm not employed and I can just kind of say whatever I want, for better or for worse, like, I can go there and just do outrageous things. And people are going to be like, what the hell? Like, it's like, I don't mind being the circus clown at all. Like, it's a useful thing to be able to do. So, like, I'll go to LinkedIn and post, like, an unhinged meme. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, so anyway, I like LinkedIn. I'd probably put that number 2, to be honest.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So we got X is the first one, and then LinkedIn. Do you do anything on TikTok or YouTube or?
I've tried. I do have a TikTok, and I tried to make it for Lost Freight to like share the message. I have not taken it seriously. This media deal is going to change all that. YouTube, all that stuff. But it's probably not going to be me doing it.
Well, that's good. Then you can at least have some help. Because it is media is so much work, and it never stops. It's a hamster wheel. And so, but there, if you start off from a good place, an organic place, I think that people resonate a lot more with the message than, you know, just starting out with a bunch of VC money and you're just going to pump it into, you know, some targeted ads. That is, I think, the old way of doing things. And I think the new way is by starting with community first and starting with a purpose first.
If you want to sound smart, you can say that. I agree, though. You're right. Everybody's community is like a huge buzzword these days.
But it's what people are looking for. Like it's I don't think it's, you know, any secret as to why your community has grown versus, you know, other areas of the freight web of where people are hanging out. Like conferences are a huge deal. There's thousands of people that go to them every year. But what happens afterwards? What happens? How does that conversation, you know, continue to flow? And I think that platforms like what you're building is where those conversations can continue to flow after the fact. Okay.
Let me say one thing real quick.
Sure.
On that note, we've got there's going to be a lot of FreightWaves F3. There's going to be a lot that happens there just in this whole domain. So just if you're on the fence about going to that, you should go. And I don't even mean just you. I'm assuming you're going to be there, hopefully.
Yeah, I'm going to be there.
Did you get a ticket from me?
I got to talk to Bradford. David Bradford, I don't know if you're listening, but we got to talk.
I put the bug in his ear. I buzzed the tower the other day to get him to resend him. But there's going to be a lot of Please Advise Hat owners there. So it'll be the vibes will be very high.
Up and to the right for the vibes
exactly,
at F3.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I think that's a pretty good place to end the show. Anything else you want to let the people know about or highlight?
Hold on. Let me see if something's up. Stay tuned. There's a lot more to come. We're going to do some more cool shit. If you're a carrier, you should go check out Lost Freight and you should send some truck lists. Like, that's cool. Please do that. But everybody, like, that message is for carriers, but everybody, I think live at pleaseadvisory.com have thrown up this newsletter subscription. And there's going to be more there soon.
So. Okay, so we'll make sure to include that in the show note. So pleaseadvise.ai, and then we'll also include all of your social channels, of course. Anything else that we should include? Probably the Discord. The Discord link would be good.
I'll after this, I'll send you the links to put on there.
Perfect.
And we'll go from there.
All right, cool. Well, if you heard that, then you should probably check out the show notes or the show description in order to find out more of what Reed is talking about. But this was a cool conversation. I'm glad I didn't really prep for this. I'm glad we just took the conversation where it wanted to go. These are my favorite kind of interviews. So I appreciate your time and appreciate more so what you're doing as well.
Hey, well, next time we do this, we're going to do it in front of a live audience in the Discord. So
let's do it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, let's do that.
Heck yeah. Nice. All right, cool. Bye. All right. Thank you, Reed. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Everything is Logistics, a podcast for the thinkers in freight, telling the stories behind how your favorite stuff and people get from point A to B. Subscribe to the show, sign up for our newsletter, and follow our socials over at everythingislogistics.com. And in addition to the podcast, I also wanted to let y'all know about another company I operate, and that's Digital Dispatch, where we help you build a better website. Now, a lot of the times we hand this task of building a new website or refreshing a current one off to a coworker's child, a neighbor down the street, or a stranger around the world, where you probably spend more time explaining the freight industry than it takes to actually build the dang website. Well, that doesn't happen at Digital Dispatch. We've been building online since 2009, but we're also early adopters of AI, automation, and other website tactics that help your company to be a central place to pull in all of your social media posts, recruit new employees, and give potential customers a glimpse into how you operate your business. Our new website builds start as low as $1,500, along with ongoing website management, maintenance, and updates starting at $90 a month, plus some bonus freight marketing and sales content similar to what you hear on the podcast. You can watch a quick explainer video over on digitaldispatch.io. Just check out the pricing page once you arrive, and you can see how we can build your digital ecosystem on a strong foundation. Until then, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'll see you all real soon, and go Jags!